Welcome to PsychTech, the psychology and technology podcast. This is episode 30, Josue. Could you believe it?
Woo! I'm excited.
That's like
Do I sound excited? I'm actually excited. I'm pretty damn excited.
That's like a tri-decadennial or something like that.
Kind of, sort of, something like that. Yeah. No, 30. We did it. We made it.
We did. So right. That means we're only 22 away from a year.
Yeah, it's true. Wow.
Drop in the bucket, my friend. So as always, I'm Kelly Dunlap. And as I mentioned, Josue Cardona is here. And we are ready to bring you a really exciting topic for episode 30. Josue has had some life changes that have inspired this episode. So Josue, why don't you share with the wonderful people at home what has been shaken bacon in your life?
So the reason I moved to New York is that, among other things, the new job that I have here is I'm working with a company that's setting up charter schools in Brooklyn, New York. And the company is very tech-focused, very the digital literacy is a really important thing to them, and so is technology. So I'm going to be helping teachers and students really use technology in throughout the learning process. So that's really, really exciting to me. And I found myself thinking a lot about how technology kind of, like, why I'm here and how technology influenced me as a kid. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think, like, you know, the stuff that's available now that is still influencing me, these kids are going to see it in middle school. And, I mean, we're setting up high schools too, but right now we're focusing on middle schools. So, like, what effect is... do 3D printers and virtual reality have on middle schoolers and their view of the world, and like where will they be compared to the stuff that we saw when we were their age? So I kind of wanted to explore that from my personal perspective and seeing what it was like for you when you were that age. Like, was there any tech that you remember in elementary school or middle school that like blew your mind or kind of swayed you in one direction or another or affected, you know, influenced some interest?
Oh, yeah. I can think of two things specifically that were tech-related. One was the Sega Genesis and Sega Master System that my parents had. So I grew up watching my parents play video games on the Sega Master System, and then my brother got a Sega Genesis for Christmas, and then I grew up playing on that. So it really just established my interest in video games and being technology friendly really, really early on. Even before I was born, it was there. So it's always been a part of my life. And I have a lot of mixed emotions about this second piece of tech, both excitement and kind of cringeworthy. But my Easy Bake Oven was one of the coolest things ever for me as a kid because I could make something. I could make something, and I didn't need help from my parents. I didn't need help from anybody. I know it was just mixing together like three ingredients and putting it in a light bulb heated micro oven. But when it came out, I was so proud. I had made something, and I had done it all by myself. So those would be my two. How about you?
I don't know. I just want to comment that the Easy Bake Oven, that's a great, great example. Because, like, you were empowered to do something that you saw your mom doing or people on TV doing, you know? And yeah, it was a simpler version. But, I mean, we'll get back to that feeling of just making something. Oh, that's so good. So good.
And it was tasty. So that's a bonus.
And it was tasty. For me, I remember in first grade, my school, they brought in... I think it belonged to the school. Maybe it was just brought around like through the township or through the city. But there was an Apple computer on a huge cart. And I remember being really little and us having this computer time. And we were exposed for the first time to a computer, to a personal computer. And I'm not sure that I understood what it was at that time. You know, and I remember they showed us some games. They showed us a couple things on it. And I got to see that in first grade. And then I didn't have one at home until I was in, I don't know, what grade was I in? Maybe seventh or eighth grade. Mm-hmm. So I got to see this technology that I didn't have like real hands-on time until maybe 6 or 7 years later. And I loved computers. I remember when we bought our first PC, it came with a book that was like Introduction to Computers, and I remember quizzing my mom on like, "Do you know what a mouse is? Mom, this is a keyboard. Mom, this goes connected to this." And I don't know, it was something that was always like in the back of my mind, like that was something that I saw when I was little. And I was telling my mom about this recently, and she had a way better story, which is that she remembers going to the World's Fair as a kid with her grandfather and seeing this computer that took up a whole room. It was just gigantic. And it reminded me how she was very forward thinking in terms of like talking to me about technology. She always worked in different areas with computers. So my mom used to take us to work with her, and she worked. She was a computer operator, and she had these huge mainframe computers that took up a whole room. And she would bring us in on the weekends, and she had to. This is kind of crazy. So she would explain to us that the information that they were recording through the computer was being recorded on these big magnetic tapes, and you had to manually switch out a whole deck of them every couple of hours. And then simultaneously, all that information was being printed on this big dot matrix printer. And then like one, maybe 10 magnetic tapes was the equivalent to one huge box of printed paper. And the printer would just print right into a box. So then like you get to a point where you'd stop and put a lid on it and then put it in storage. I don't know, like I saw this evolution of computers and technology, and it was always in my mind. It was always in my mind that my mom was able to do this stuff at work, and we didn't do that at school, you know? And when we were finally able to do it, I guess it was like in the back of my mind. I don't know how exactly it influenced me that early on, but it was huge to just know, especially maybe around 6th or 7th grade when I knew what computers could do, that it was out there. It kind of, to think that there were things that I couldn't do anymore, or that I could do, and I wasn't doing them with computers, kind of, I mean, it was always on my mind.
Well, now thinking specifically about computers, I'm not sure I can distinctly remember a time before a computer, because my grandfather owned his own photography studio, and he converted to computers really, really early on for like billing and tracking. So I remember being very, very small and at his office and seeing them there. I also remember my brother had a computer when I was elementary school, so very, very young. And then when he got to high school and I transitioned to middle school, I got his old computer. And I can distinctly remember the feeling of empowerment when I took out a floppy disk back in the day when it was actually floppy and swap out a new one. And I felt like a genius. I felt like that girl in Jurassic Park who's, "I'm a hacker, I know this." And, you know, playing Jeopardy on that machine in current events was before I was born, but it didn't matter because it was so much fun and I could use it. And I spent a large part of my childhood on that computer in DOS, just writing, not code, but writing stories as a little kid, which is, you know, quite an accomplishment. I think I actually wrote like 100 pages when I was between middle school and high school, just writing stories. And then I can also distinctly remember in high school, I had to take a typing course. It was a required course at my high school. And I remember being so bored because they would give the assignment. And since I was so used to typing and so used to computers, that was probably the most boring class I've ever taken. You know, especially, you know, the day one, A, S. And so I would do all of it, you know, two-handed and done, and then I'd have 50 minutes to sit around and do nothing. So, yeah, I think there's lots of really cool things that computers have enabled. Curiosity, empowerment, making me feel smart, which is, I think, super important for any kid.
Man, like, all these memories are starting to come to me. I had a VTech.
I know!
I had a VTech computer when I was little. It was essentially a toy, but it did have a basic programming module, and it had a manual. So nobody in my life knew how to code in BASIC. So I didn't have anybody to teach me how to do it or tell me what I was doing wrong. So I had this little manual, and I was learning on my own, and I remember writing little programs like Hello World and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, it's like again, the idea that you're making something is so cool. It is really empowering. And I don't know, it's almost like magic, right, at that point. Because, like, you know how to make stuff. Like, you know how to build a sandcastle, or you know how to build with Legos. But all of a sudden, you're making one thing out of just keystrokes. And I don't know. Damn, I've got so many memories now about that.
Well,
I used to use that VTech computer so much.
It still feels like magic. And I will totally opt to that. The game I made last semester, the fact that it's playable and you can go through this very limited world, but you collect certain things and battle certain things. I look at it and then I look at the code I wrote, and it still feels magical that this translates into that and that I made something that other people can enjoy.
So do you think that feeling of, like, when you save something onto a floppy for the first time, or even the Easy Bake Oven, you know, actually making something, feeling empowered, can you pinpoint, like, any way that affected you directly? Because I'm having difficulty finding moments in my own life where I say this specifically led to that, although to be fair, I do have a degree in electronics. Like, that's exactly what I wanted to do. But I don't remember, like, that aha moment where I said, that's what I'm going to do. It was just, I guess it always felt good. So that's what I just felt comfortable in that arena and never left.
I mean, I think about all the things that I still really enjoy as an adult, and they all have roots in my childhood. You know, for example, I love to bake. I really do, especially sweets. You know, maybe trace that back. I mean, my mom's a big baker. My entire family is all into sweets and baking, so I'm sure that has a lot to do with it, too. And, I mean, the fact that the entire reason I got into the video games and psychology was because I wanted to get my university to pay for me to buy video games, which comes from, you know, coming up around video games and wanting to talk and discuss them and play them. I met my husband because we played video games. And, you know, I think I've said it before, he fell in love with me instantly, but it took me 2 years to decide that he was worth a go. And in that 2 years, we played a ridiculous amount of Halo. So that kept me coming back and being around him so he could wear me down. So I think tech has had a huge impact on my life. I don't think there's been one particular aha moment, but if I didn't have those experiences as a child, especially around games, considering the current and past way that women in games has been thought about and women in games have been treated, I don't think I would have ever gotten into it if I didn't have that passion from almost the get-go.
So, have you ever read Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers?
No.
So, there's a story in that book. That's where I read the story. It's Bill Gates, and I don't remember the specifics, but essentially it boils down to the fact that Bill Gates was able to build Microsoft because he had access to a supercomputer right next to his house. A university very close to his house had a supercomputer, and he had access to it. He was able to use it like really late at night when nobody at the university was using it, and he just messed around with it, played with it, and got really good using a computer at a level that most people in the world didn't have access to. And I don't know, my family was always lower middle class. Like, we did manage to have our own PC at one point, and before that I used one at school a lot, but I don't remember, other than that moment in first grade, seeing something that was, it just felt like distant, you know? It's like, this is like, you're looking at the future, kind of like what is the at Epcot Center, what is the thing there with all the future stuff? I don't know if they even have that still.
What, like Disney?
Yeah, yeah.
There's the, it's not the Innovatium, it's something like that, Innovatorium or Inventions. There we go, that's what it is.
Yeah, right, and it's supposed to be like a peek into the future, right? And I don't remember ever having access to anything like that I said, that I was able to play with that I couldn't have at home. Mm-hmm. I also had a Sega Master System, I had a Genesis, But I had those at home, so maybe I took them for granted. And I can't think of – and what I'm getting at is that I'm going to start working with students who many of them will not have access to even a computer at their home. But at school, they each get a Chromebook. And we're setting things up in such a way where I'm you know, I'm making plans to bring VR into the school through like Google Cardboard. Mm-hmm. I'm helping teachers create like digital curriculums. I'm having them assign games, things like that. And like I think back to when I was in school and how much I hated it and how boring it was, and I can't imagine like having access to all this stuff at school. But like, what did I play? I played Oregon Trail and Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego. And those games were like so influential to me, but there was just like two that I can name, and they blew my mind. And I can't imagine what it's going to be like for these students, and not just at my school, but in other schools that are like this, that are very, you know, tech focused.
Well, it's so interesting you bring up Oregon Trail, because as I've been thinking about, you know, influential stuff from when I was a middle schooler or child, I remember I was in one of the gifted and talented programs, and we didn't necessarily have computers in our school, but when I got to go once a week to the other school where the gifted and talented program was held, they had an entire room of Macs. You know, the ones that had the really pretty colors on it?
Yeah, the iMacs?
I think they were iMacs.
Yeah, yeah.
And we would sit there and play Oregon Trail, and all of my friends, we would sit there and we would name our characters after each other. And so it was this huge bonding experience for us socially. It made me feel really cool because I was playing a computer game. I was getting to use a computer itself, which is something I couldn't get at my other school or was much harder to get. But I think you're absolutely right when it comes down to the accessibility and the availability, is that you have to have it. As you were talking about Bill Gates, I thought about the history of video games. Video games were invented by people screwing around in a lab. They had access to a supercomputer, and so they just started messing around with it, seeing what they could do. And I think that's so, so important, especially working with children, is that when you give them free rein to play, you give them the tools and you give them the support and then are just kind of hands off, they're going to take it and they're going to make it into something that's awesome and exciting for them and that can have long-reaching implications.
There's, and I don't remember the researcher's name, but I'll put it in the show notes, where he went to this country, to this really poor town, and he put a computer there, and I believe the kids in that town didn't even know English, but they were able to, you know, they started messing with the computer, they turned it on, and they just started playing with the keyboard, and when he came back a few months later, like, they had figured it out, they had access to the software, they were able to play games on it, they just figured it out because it was there and they were able to mess with it, just tinker.
That's the great thing about working with children, is that they're inherently curious and they inherently want to play with the world to figure out how it works. You see that in infants and babies. They touch things, they put things in their mouth, they do all sorts of random crazy things that adults would never think about doing to try and figure out how stuff works. They knock stuff off the table to see if it falls. And that continues into adolescence. And at some point in adolescence, we start to get that nagging, oh, don't screw up, because then you're going to be ostracized and everything will be awful. But until you get to that point, screwing up isn't a big deal at all, because you're just, everybody's doing it. Everybody's learning and everybody's experimenting.
One of the most exciting things about this new job is that I'm going to be running what is essentially like a little hackerspace. Like a maker program where they'll mess with electronics and all sorts of stuff. And you know, we're going to have this opportunity to do these structured projects, but they're also going to be able to make their own stuff. And I'm just planning for it right now, but I can't imagine what that's going to be like to be able to support all of these kids as they're learning and then just going crazy with all this cool tech. Like I said, everything from VR to building electronic kits to programming on the computer, I can't imagine what that's going to be like.
I mean, I can't imagine from their perspective, because I'm old and grizzled now. But a couple months ago, for John and I's anniversary, my gift to him was, one, I made a Twine, which is kind of like a choose your own adventure software program. It's free. It's really awesome.
Interactive fiction.
Yeah, interactive fiction.
Yeah, yep.
So that's really awesome. And so I made something special for him. And then I also made something in Game Salad, which is a small, most mobile apps are, or mobile app games are made in Game Salad. It's free software. It's really, it's a visual coding language. And so I actually made an endless runner. So I guess the caveat is we have a cat. His name is Simon. I'm pretty sure he's the devil. He's evil, but John loves him. He and Simon are two peas in a pod, and I'm not a fan. So I made an endless runner where I took a picture of Simon, and he was the player character. And when you hit spacebar, he would jump. And so it's this platform, and then the platform would open up, and there's spikes beneath. So you had to jump over an increasingly more difficult variety of open spaces and jumps. And of course, every single time you hit the space button, he goes, meow, and meows. And then if he hits the spikes, he's like, meow, or something like that. And again, it was, you know, we've been married for a long time, and that was probably the coolest thing. The thing that I was the most proud of was because I made something, and I got to give it to John, and he got to play with it. And it's something that I did all on my own, and I feel like it was as satisfying for me. I don't even know how he felt. I don't really care. I felt really cool.
There's actually – Games for Change has a competition here in New York City for middle school and high schoolers to create a game with some sort of a game for change, right? I mean, we mm-hmm. talked about Game for Change a few months ago, and – you know, like, I've already put it out there to the school that I want to encourage the student to do that.
Yeah. And forget science fairs. This is the new science fair. Last Saturday, John and I drove up to Pittsburgh to see our mutual friend, Steve, also known as Dr. Kuniak. He was having a Geek Gaming and Health Day. So we went out there and went to the event and brought our Xbox stuff and played around. It was a lot of fun. And on the way back, we were listening to a podcast from This American Life on school integration and how that helps close the achievement gap and things like that. And one of the really cool things that came out of it was there's a school in Connecticut that is using diversity as an allure to get people to come to a less than desirable part of town. So it's really great. It's a magnet school. It's got a planetarium and a solarium and a vivarium and all the ariums. But what the author was talking about was how diversity right now is something that we don't want to talk about, but it is becoming an increasingly more important thing to have in a school for parents, especially parents of white kids, is that pretty soon white is no longer going to be the majority in America. And parents are slowly going to start to realize over the next generation or so that having children in schools with diverse populations is going to be a critical thing. Like, it's important as math or science in navigating the world of the future. And so that's what makes me think about technology, is that there's, of course, current concerns about screen addiction and technology, you know, stealing our children, which we've talked about ad nauseum. But I think people are slowly going to realize, and hopefully already have, that your child needs to be technologically literate or they are going to get left behind. Literally, there's not going to be a place for them. If you can't type 60 words per second, you are much less marketable. If you don't know how to use social media of some kind, if you don't know how to code, it's going to be as important to the future of business and industry and education as being able to read is now or the last 100 years.
Yeah, I can't imagine having gone to school and be provided all these tools and then none of my teachers knew how to use it. Like, and that's what's happening now. And I'm seeing some of these teachers who, well, if all your students have Chromebooks, why are you insisting on using Microsoft Word because you hate Chromebooks so much? Why don't you learn to use it so you can help your students? And why aren't you trying to be a little more digital literate? And just because these students depend on you. And again, there's like this expectation that students or that younger people just know more about certain things than adults do. And that's really, really weird to me. And it's not weird, right, to talk to somebody and have them talk about how their niece or their nephew or their kids, you know, they're the ones who can, you know, people still joke around about not being able to program a VCR, mm-hmm. right? And that's disturbing to me. Because everything you said is so true. We're living in a world where that's what's happening. That's what's moving things forward. And more jobs are being able to – are being either automated, by some sort of either a computer or a robot. And then many people have to, the jobs that are becoming more available are related to using that technology or servicing that technology. And I spoke to someone recently who was in India, and she was telling me how so many engineering graduates, most of them don't end up working in the engineering that they studied because they all end up finding jobs in software engineering.
Yep.
Because that's what's needed right now.
That's where the jobs are.
Yeah, and even in the U.S. we have a deficit. Like if you want to learn to code, you don't have to go get a degree in computer science or software engineering. Just learn to code and you'll have opportunities out there.
Go to the University of YouTube.
Yes, yes, yes. And actually, that's another thing that is really important. We can learn so much from just going online on our own. If school doesn't compete with that, what are we doing?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really, really good point. And one thing that I think some more progressive schools are moving towards, instead of trying to enforce, you will learn math, you will learn science, you will learn health, you will learn English, everything else we don't care about, but here are the things that you have to have to be a functioning member of society. More progressive schools are basically casting a wide net, seeing what children are enjoying, and then digging really, really deep into that specific area. So, for example, myself, I really like psychology, and if I express that as a young child, my math courses would probably be tailored to psychology, and my science courses would be tailored to psychology. My English readings would be tailored to psychology. So that way I'm becoming a much more rounded individual at a much younger age, and that way I really value everything I'm learning. So if I needed to, for example, take that math and balance my checkbook, I know it, and it actually means something to me because I use it in, say, psychology or engineering or science, or even music is very math-based, which I think is really exciting. And going back to your point, my husband and I have this joke. It's the under 30 curse, that if you look like you're under 30 in your office, you automatically know how to fix anything from the copy machine to the email to the website, regardless of what your job duties are. It's just assumed that if you look like a young person, you must kind of know what's going on, which is really different than it's ever been in the past.
Yeah, and it's almost like this accepted obsolescence, right? Like, why don't you just hit that button, right? Like, why are you so afraid to hit the button? Why are you asking the young guy to come over and click that for you?
You too can YouTube.
You too can YouTube. I think there's a difference between using technology as a tool to just make things. See, because like even the idea that this is a one-to-one school, this is like a buzz term in education, the idea that every child gets their own laptop or tablet, like one thing is just giving it to them, and another thing is creating a curriculum that actually or an environment or a culture that actually uses it, right? Again, I'm there to set up, like I'm in training at the school, and we're practicing how to pass out papers and things like that in one training, and then they're very thorough in this professional development. And in the other one, they're talking about how like we're trying to move all digital because, you know, everybody hates the copy machine. And there's this disconnect, you know, and it's because there's generations there, and it's because a lot of people haven't let go of how to do things in a certain way. And I know that that's something that's happening at a national level. It's just hard for everybody to get into that, to like go all in. And I don't know if anybody has an answer on how to do that correctly while also adhering to Common Core standards nationally. And there's a lot of stuff there. And I would love to spend another episode one day talking about educational technology in particular. Like, is it actually helping kids learn something? But just having the tools there is something that, like, how exponential is that change going to be when you think about where we were in sixth grade and where we are now and the limited access we had? It sounds like you had access to a whole lab every now and then. Mm-hmm. And now, we're not even talking about cell phones, right? Like, sixth, seventh graders today have cell phones, and they can do a lot with those, and lots of schools aren't taking advantage of that. And we had this conversation about how a lot of kids are like, they're very mobile savvy, but they're not necessarily computer savvy.
Right.
Like, they know how to use their phone, but they have no idea how to X out of a browser window, which is really interesting, because that means that the students I'm going to be working with there's this huge spectrum of digital literacy there and comfort with technology. That's going to be fascinating. And I'm so excited to see the difference between a teacher that embraces it and how that affects the classroom, and a teacher that doesn't embrace it or is just willing to tolerate it, and what effect that will have in a classroom.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important thing is access, which it sounds like they have, because again, kids are inherently curious and they're going to play around with it. They're going to tinker regardless of whether they have support or not. Now, if it's punished, that's a different thing. But obviously, if they've got a teacher who's supportive and has a guiding hand, then really the sky's the limit. One of the most interesting things about this technology gap, psychologically speaking, is I found in the generational gap between parents and children. So, for example, in the past, children have always rebelled. They've always found something that their parents find distasteful. It's part of the developmental cycle. My parents liked the Eagles, and my grandparents thought that was horrible, raucous noise. My grandparents liked jazz, and their parents thought that was like the devil's music. So there's always something going on. But with the boom of technology, the gap between what kids know and what parents know is bigger than it's ever been, and by a large margin too. And I think that's where we get a lot of fear about using tech. That's why we get all these fear-mongering articles about screen addiction and video game addiction. It's because parents, they just don't know, and they're worried for their kids, which is good. We want parents to be concerned about their children. But it does smack of, you know, children who are basically the parents in the relationship, specifically first generation families where the parents don't speak English and the child does. The child then takes on this parentified role because they are now doing the communicating between parent and outside world. And I think we're seeing a lot of that happening with the internet generation of children and young adults. At least when you and I were coming up, Josue, I think it was more of it, because right now kids who are being born and young children, their parents are pretty internet savvy too. But that thing where you have to rely on your child to do something for you can cause a lot of distress in parents.
I don't know. Like, it does make me think that my mom was ahead of me at one point. Like I mentioned, she introduced me to all this stuff that she was using at work. But once it got to PCs, I guess once the pace got a lot faster, she kind of stayed back. She didn't, you know, stay with it. And now, you know, she's like interested in getting an iPad and things like that. And now she's kind of catching up. But if it was like in my childhood, she would have been first in line for an iPad, and she'd let me play with it every now and then. But, you know, she'd be the expert. And yeah, that hasn't been the case in a very, very long time. And I don't know. I'm really excited about having the opportunity to do that or play that role for the hundreds of students at these schools, and help their teachers be that also, you know, and be able to take that role. And once you empower all of these kids, especially kids who, again, they don't have access to it, but I'm going to try to show them everything that they can do with it, or as much as I can, so that they can then go ahead and run with it. Like, I'm just really excited, and I'll definitely report back in the future as this develops, because right now I'm just developing the plan for the school year that's about to start in a couple weeks, and I'm just so excited about it. And I've been having this conversation with other people about how, you know, technology was influential to me, and there were many examples that I didn't bring up. I'm sure there are a few that you didn't bring up, and I don't know. It's I've been very happy these last few days just thinking about this.
Yeah, well, I definitely will want to hear a report in from you later on how it's going. And I think it's an awesome thing that you're getting to do. So keep up the good work, sir.
Thank you. I'll try.
All right, so I think that's going to be it for this episode of Psych Tech. As always,
we're not playing a game? No game this week?
Okay, all right, so we'll play a game real quick. All right, so what game are we playing this week?
Well, I'd like to do another 20 questions because I can't come up with anything better over a podcast. So, are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. So, I'm going to do another sci-fi movie.
Ready? Okay. Yes.
All right. So, whenever you're ready.
Is it placed in the future?
Yes.
Are there spaceships?
Yes.
Does it have star in the name of it?
Yes.
Is it a Star Wars movie?
No.
Is it a Star Trek movie?
Yes.
Is Kirk the captain?
Yes.
Are there whales?
No.
Okay. Do they go find Spock?
No.
Are there creepy little earwigs that crawl into people's ears?
Huh. I don't think so.
So
no.
it's not Wrath of Khan.
Oh, then. Oh, yeah. And I couldn't remember the ear things. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Did I get it right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, that was 9! Woo! The Trekkie in me is so proud right now.
Yeah, I tried to, you know.
After my stellar performance two weeks ago, decided to.
Yeah, I tried to make it easier. I figured you'd get a Star Trek one. All right, that was it. That was not a good game. You don't even have to include this in the recording, honestly.
I think that was the best game.
All right.
Do with it what you will. 9 questions. The bar has been set.
Do with it what you will.
Okay. All right, that's it for this week's episode of Psych Tech. As always, you can find us online at psychtechpodcast.com, as well on Twitter, which is at psychtechcast. You can find Josue and myself on Twitter as well. So we look forward to catching you next week. And I have to say it. I know it's totally Ollie's line, but after having a Star Trek ending, I got to say live long and prosper.
It's not his line. It's Spock's line. Come on.
But he uses it at the end of Nerd Hour.
So what?
Live long and prosper.